Welcome to the Liberators Podcast, a podcast designed to promote physical, psychological, spiritual, and financial freedom. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Liberators Podcast. Today, we have a very special guest, Ms. Candace Blacknall, who is an MD, MBA, and is the CEO and co-founder of GABA, a career development platform and community. Candace has been passionate about giving back through innovation and service since her time in the Army. She has spent the last 6 years coaching students to success and started GABA to ensure that students, particularly underrepresented minorities, have a place to share, connect, and prepare along their journey to careers. Please welcome me in introducing a very special guest, somebody that has a lot of information, a lot of knowledge and understanding, and just, you know, a total innovator in this tech space, Ms. Candace Blacknall. How you doing? Hold on.
I'm waiting to see if you catch it. Okay. I was gonna wait to see if you caught it, Doctor. But I wasn't gonna fuss.
Candace Blacknall.
You caught it. I said, "No, this is something." Oh Lord. No, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Definitely. So today our conversation is gonna, pretty much encompass your journey on how you developed the mobile application. And just to get things started, tell us a little bit about your journey to medicine and how that led you to business school, and how business school led you to what you're currently doing right now.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so medicine, let's do that first. So when I was coming out of high school, I needed to pay for college, and I was like, okay, how are we gonna do that? Decided I was gonna go to the military. And I had one statement from my family about this, which was, make sure whatever you do in the military can translate to a job in the civilian side when you get out. So when they gave me my list of jobs, I picked something in healthcare because I figure people always get sick, people always need health. I had no idea about any health careers. No one in my family was a doctor. I think at the probably my younger years, I said I wanted to be a veterinarian, but needless to say, I didn't have any exposure at that time. When I finished the military stuff, I decided to go to college and I became a psychology major. So I still wasn't on the track to go to medicine. Totally did not have it on my radar. If you'd asked me what I was going to be at that time, I would have said I'm going to work for the State Department as a foreign affairs ambassador. So I truly had no concept of medicine in my mind. But I deployed to Iraq my sophomore year, and I actually got an opportunity to do my medical job, and I loved it. I loved everything about running a clinic. I loved clinical operations. I loved training. I thought it was the coolest thing I could have ever got an opportunity to do. So I came back, and I was still a psych major, still didn't take any science classes. And I actually waited until my junior year to really finally commit. And my junior year, I walked into my career counselor's office and I said, "So I'm going to medical school." And she looked at me and said, "You haven't taken any science classes." And I said, "I know, but I'm still going to medical school." So I ended up, I graduated with my bachelor's in psychology and I did a post-bac and worked nights at the hospital as a nursing assistant. And I went and got into medical school, like, you know, took the MCAT, went through that. And when I was in medical school, I knew I wanted to do something more. I think there's a lot of ways to give back. And really, I think in medicine, you learn about the clinical ways to give back. You can give back through research, you can give back through volunteerism, but there are ways you can give, you know, through policy and things like that. But there are ways even in business for you to give back. So Morehouse came out and said they had a dual degree MD MBA program. Maybe my second year. And I said, okay, I went to the info session. I love what I heard. And I said, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go and do my MBA at Georgia Tech. And I did. And when I was there, I met a lot of people who wanted to build businesses and my vision for myself went from working in hospital administration to, hey, I could actually build something on my own. I could start something on my own or help or use my business skills in clinical practice in a different way. So that's when I really got plugged into the startup world and the world of creating technology. Actually, the early stages of GABA, it was a class project, which a lot of people don't know. It was a class project. I had to come up with a business idea, me and my classmate. And the early stages of those conversations turned into what today is GABA. And I think when you get passionate about something, if you live long enough and you're fortunate enough, you will find something you're passionate about. And I was passionate about what I was doing and passionate about our mission. And I just kept going from there and opportunities kept presenting themselves. And I just kept saying yes. So here we are.
Okay. So what was it about business that appealed to you or your interest?
Yeah. So I think business gets a bad rep in medicine.
I agree.
It's sad to say, but business gets a bad rep. For me, when I looked at myself as a clinician and also a businesswoman, I realized that, man, that's a dynamic punch right there. That's someone who knows clinical operations and knows how to take care of people, but also knows how to make that financially viable. There are hospitals all around the rural United States that close every year. I think in 2016, they close a bunch of them. And it was all because they weren't managed well financially. They weren't making enough money to keep their doors open. So at the time, going into business was another way for me to give back. And it was also a way for me to have a lot more flexibility and authority and autonomy in my career. Because as you know, the autonomy of providers now is shrinking by the second. I see the strikes and the protests, and I was like, I don't want to be another, you know, cog in the machine. I want to have some autonomy and I want to have some control. So for me, that was what business represented, was a way to do both, so to have ownership about my destiny, but also to give, you know, a different perspective on my ability to have an impact in a clinical environment.
Mm-hmm. And I think like one of the most important things that I find about business and the importance of it is the freedom that it offers, you know, the flexibility. Mm-hmm. It can be more work at time, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
As I'm sitting here talking to you, you know, I can see the weight that it can have sometimes, but you're building something that you'll control, you know, that that you'll own. And I think medicine, unfortunately, sometimes sends us through this course, but doesn't give us those tools to control our own destiny beyond school.
Exactly. And you never get away from business. I think that's probably the biggest mistake. Medical schools come in or they don't prepare you for that reality, is that you don't get away from business. No matter, I don't care if you are a janitor or a neuroscientist, you're not going to escape business. We live in the United States. It's a capitalistic system. Everything boils down to the cost and the inputs and the outputs. So when you go, for example, after residency and you get your first contract at a hospital, negotiations is all about business. And in order for you to be effective at negotiating, you really need to understand how the other party is valuing things. What are they doing to de-risk their investment in you? Understanding that language, understanding those kind of business priorities positions you for success. And it also positions you for leadership, because hospitals want physicians who are going to step into those roles, but they can't trust you in those roles if you don't understand the business mechanism that makes all of this possible. You know, hospitals don't run on altruism alone, though they are usually nonprofits. I'm not going to get into that, but yeah, it's an important skill to have. You're not going to escape it. Marketing is something that you do every time you go on an interview. And if so, you may as well go ahead and learn it, may as well adopt some level of business awareness as a medical student or a medical professional in general.
Totally agree. But one thing that I will say is that I think in popular culture, the idea that business people are like C students and stuff like that, you're the anti to that. You get what I mean? Like, you're the complete opposite. Like, you're smart in real life. You know what I mean? So How has that been for you, crossing over from medicine? And I think probably when they realize that you are MD, that's probably a shocker for a lot of people, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, Georgia Tech is an amazing and welcoming environment. So they really want you to be there. It is definitely, hands down, not the rigor of being a medical student, particularly that second year of medical school. I feel like if you can make it through that, you can make it through anything. Nothing is ever hard again. And so it's definitely not the rigor. I would say it's like a language, right? We speak the language of medicine. We speak the language of science, and they speak the language of business, and you're learning a new language. It's just the vocabulary and the structure of that language is different, but they also put an emphasis on something that I think more medical programs could benefit from. And that's the power of people and the power of network. So whereas my medical degree was all, sitting in the library for hours and hours on end, trying to get this grade and get this score, my business classes were, I worked in a group environment on different projects. Very rarely did I work on something all by myself. Usually it was a group environment. We worked together, and there was a lot of built-in downtime for us to go to coffee chats and sit down and meet people and network and hang out with your classmates, because there is this understanding that, yeah, you have your intellectual currency, but you also have your people, your social currency, and that can be very powerful in the grand scheme of your career. And so I think, my business colleagues are, they're brilliant people, man. Some of them have done amazing things. I did come into it initially thinking, I got this MD, I'm the fancy one. But no, some of these people had gone to, years of Peace Corps and built villages and came back and became the, the chief something, executive something at, Delta, and was the VP of it. I mean, they had done amazing things. It was just a different kind of path and a different way of thinking about things. But ultimately, what I learned in business school was something that I think is always valuable no matter what career you go in, which is that your network is everything. Mm-hmm. Who you know is so important, and you have to make time to get to know people around you.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. So we're going to pivot a little bit. Tell us more about the GABA application, what it's designed to do, who is designed to help, mm-hmm. also what inspired it.
Yeah. So obviously in telling my journey to medicine, I had a bunch of different careers. What I didn't tell you was that I was also a phlebotomist at some point in there. I was a nurse's assistant somewhere in there. I was a patient care technician somewhere in there. Had a lot of odd and end jobs. And really, when I look back over my career, the thing that helped me figure out what I truly wanted to do was oftentimes miscellaneous. It was me having a conversation with someone, in passing, me seeing someone getting to do something cool. And so I came away from that reflecting on my own journey and realized that we needed a way for people to learn about careers and build relationships and build a network in an equitable, accessible fashion. Now, currently, if you download the GABA app, it's centered around helping you connect to mentors and tutors and coaches like that. But in the spring, it'll look a lot like TikTok. And so when you come to GABA, what you'll do, there'll be a lot of short form videos and articles that are specific to careers. And it'll be folks showing what a day in the life of their job and their work experience really is like. As you engage with the social media content, like it, share it, save it, things like that, our algorithm will take note of the kinds of careers that you're interested in, and it'll unlock career pathways for you. So you can learn more about salary expectations, what are the kinds of skills or experiences you need to have to get there. In addition to, here's a mentor and someone to help kind of coach you and do the people aspect of that. So it is even evolving, even now, even as we speak, it is evolving. And I think now it's closer to my vision of what it could be and the impact it could have, which I think is important to know when you start something like this. The best advice I can give you is to be open to the fact that it will change and be adaptable, because we've changed at least four times to get to where we are now. And Yeah, I feel like I'm rambling, but I'm answering your question.
You're answering.
Okay, how did I get to this point? Now, obviously, there's some nitty gritty stuff in there. Obviously, you put the team together, you raise the money to build this thing, you give people salaries, you get the designs out there, you get the concepts out there. The vision will change a little bit over time, but ultimately, what you end up with at the end is something that you can really be proud of. And I think that's the most important part, is focus on the impact you want to have, realizing that how you have that impact may change over time. So GABA is definitely not what it was last year, top of the year around this time, 2021. And it's not going to even be that what it is today come spring of 2022. So I knew what I wanted to do was create a safe space for people to be curious and explore and build their network. And that was what I focused on. And so I was okay with the how changing as needed based upon the feedback that we were getting from the people that was using the product.
Okay. And there's this concept that your business is kind of like a child. So how do you deal with your child growing up, you know, and going through those changes and graduating? You know, how do you deal with that?
That's such a good question. So I think initially GABA felt like it was my kid. It was my child. It felt so close to my chest. You couldn't say nothing about GABA, do nothing about GABA without me getting in my feelings. I was hurt. I owned it. You didn't tell me my child is ugly. How dare you? I was upset. I felt like Erica Badu. I'm an artist and I'm sensitive about my stuff, okay? You know? Yeah. And that hasn't totally gone away, but I think what happens is you get a team around you and you realize you don't have all the answers. And sometimes the people that are on your team have better answers, better suggestions, better ideas. And it starts to feel less like just your baby. It starts to be like the village kid. Like you, okay. Yeah, it might have originated with me, but now everyone is responsible for feeding the kid. I mean, when somebody has a Monday, somebody has a Tuesday, everyone does their part to make sure this baby, you know, is fed. And then as you build money around it, so you have investors now, it feels even more like it's not your baby. When it's to the point sometimes with GABA where someone will, you know, I used to be very close chest about what GABA could be tomorrow. So if someone made a suggestion about what we could do with the platform, I was just like, oh, I couldn't tolerate it. It was like someone set me on fire. Like, you don't understand how this works. Now, when people make suggestions, it's like, you know, I can actually entertain it in this very loose way because it doesn't feel like it belongs to me. It feels like GABA belongs to the world. GABA is here to have an impact on the world. So it can't just be mine. It can't be anymore. If it only is mine, then it won't grow. So it helps me get distance. And I think that distance is healthy for both of us. Now I can sleep at night when things are going awry, because I'm like, you know what? It won't die in a day. It didn't get built in a day. It'll be fine. Go to bed. You know, I'm not sitting up all night pacing, waiting by the phone like you would if your kid was lost. So that your relationship to your concept does change over time, especially as you get more hands in the pot and you realize like there's no way you're going to get this thing off the ground with just you. The more you realize like your kid needs more than just you, they need not just mommy, daddy, daddy, mommy, daddy, but like uncle, auntie, like all these people are important. Then you start to feel less, you know, clingy about outcomes.
Okay. And with like building your team, I noticed that you have a very diverse group of people. That spans talent, you know, as well. How do you go about resisting the urge to like hire your friends or hire people that you know, hire people that you feel comfortable with? You know what I mean? Like, how do you avoid that?
Initially, you don't. Initially, you have this idea and you don't have any money. And I would recommend you not put a whole lot of your money into your idea. I know that sounds so counterintuitive because we all want to do it, but don't. Try not to. Go out there and get a grant. Have somebody else pay for it. But initially, you will hire your friends, your peers, and they will help build the initial designs and the initial version. And then you'll be able to take that version and that vision, and you'll be able to pitch it to different investors or competitions. There are things called pitch competitions where you can actually win a grant I think the largest one we've won so far is $96,000. And you can win a grant. I know. Right. Raise the roof. Yes. Yes. Praise. And so you can get grants to, okay. But you have to have a concept of what you're building. You have to be able to tell that vision of what this is going to do and how the impact it's going to have. So those initial friends, they help you get that. And somebody says, oh, I love that. And they put a little money in your pocket, and then you fire your friends. And don't feel bad. Don't feel bad when you got to fire your friends. You'll fire your friends, your sister, your mom, all those people that helped you. And they're, you fire them, because the reality is you need better talent. You need better people. Some of those people will stay. We have one GABA team member. She runs our social media accounts, and she's been with me almost since day one. And so she can keep track of the history and progress, but she is rare. All of the people we had, she's the last of the Mohicans. That's it. All of those people are gone. They all went on their way, either fired or they gracefully exited the company. And that's part of it, right? When your kid goes to high school, they need different things. When they go to college, they need different things. Your responsibility as a parent, or your responsibility as a CEO, is to make sure you're providing this machine the resources it needs to go to its next level. And sometimes that means cutting the weight or getting better talent on board where you ordinarily couldn't afford to. So it's okay to hire your friends. Just know that one day you will fire them. So structure your contracts accordingly. I mean, I know that's harsh.
It's business, you know? Business. And I think it's hard sometimes for people to understand that doing what's best for your business isn't disloyal. You get what I mean? Like, my relationship with you as a friend has nothing to do with your position.
Exactly.
In this company. Exactly. But it can feel like that for them, of course.
Yeah, it can. And you just tell them, you know, you're building to be a Black person in technology, to be a Black woman in technology is unheard of.
Right.
So you just have to tell them, like, you know, you have a vision for a company, but you have to also recognize what you represent. Mm-hmm. And so when you walk in that room and you say, oh, I'm building this technology product, not I have a hair product or I have a skincare line or I sell candles, people sit up like, what? Mm-hmm. They've never heard of that before. Wow, how did you? And they have a lot of how and why. And some of it's curious and some of it's doubtful. Right. But needless to say, you represent something very, very powerful for your community. And you have a responsibility. And so you can't stop that. You can't stop that vision and that engine for any one person. So I've luckily had people who very well understood it's time to go. It's time to go. You knew this was coming. Thank you for your service. Here's your stocks. Good day to you. I got to go continue to raise this business, because otherwise what I just put in your hand in terms of shares means nothing. Right. So I want you to get out my way and also cheer for me on the sidelines, so that what you have means something, because I'm out here winning. So I want you to let us win. I'm winning for you. You want me to go out here and make this money and make it happen for you. And I think everyone was like, you're right. You're right. And I was like, yeah, because basically you own nothing if I don't do what I need to do. And they're like, definitely. You're right. Definitely. Yeah.
So where do you see the app being in the next 5 years, or maybe 1 year? Because I know you say it's changing month by month, you know, so.
So in 1 year, GABA will quite literally be global. We just signed a deal this morning, actually, with a major.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's 20 million people around the globe. I have moments where I literally get off the phone sometimes and I'm like, who in the world do I think I am? Like, I just cannot believe the conversation I just had. But so at the end, we'll be a global resource, and the UK will be our home, which is crazy to me, because I guess I always dreamt. I actually went back and looked at a journal article that I wrote, And I wrote things that I saw, I wanted to see in my future. Like I wrote a letter to my future self, and I highly recommend you do that. It write a letter to your past self, tell yourself thank you, and reflect on everything that you've been through, but also write a letter to your future self. And so yesterday I went back and I read that letter, and I was just blown away by how much of that stuff is coming to fruition, and also how funny some of it presented, because I would ask for, like, I don't know, a lot of fruit. And then I'm like, I didn't get a lot of fruit. And then I realized, yes, I did. I got a lot of fruit snacks. Like, it was like, it's always interesting how the universe play with you a little bit. But yeah, so we'll, in the next year, that's where we'll be. And in the next, and I have no reason to suspect that we'll be slowing down anytime soon.
Yeah, me either. It's just, you know, there's also like this concept that I was telling you about in the book that I read called How to Build a $1 billion App, where the beginning of it, the beginning of building a business sometimes can feel so linear, but over time it becomes exponential. And it's like, you know, so it's like 1 million, we're in front of 1 million people, now you're in front of 20 million, you know, and how crazy is that to even think about that, that what, how many years ago you were sitting in medical school?
And like, right. Like, I'm like, I just graduated medical school last year. This is crazy. GABA started off as an idea, and it wasn't even a fully fledged idea. It was like a, to think about where we started to where we are. I even talked to advisors who've been with us from day one, and they're like, and they see the product and they're like, you do remember you started off. I'm like, yeah, no. They're like, this is crazy. The evolution of an app, of any piece of technology, is wild. And you're right. For a while in the beginning, you do have that that flat line. I think it's literally, there's like so much tension between the flat line and getting that initial lift. And you just have to keep pushing at it and keep tapping it and see which solution or which strategy yields fruit until you get to, you know, you going from thousands of people, from hundreds of people to thousands of people, from thousands of people to your first million, from your first million. And then, you know, at every stage, there's new problems and new challenges, but it's always something to celebrate.
So for those who have an app idea, but they just can't figure out the process of developing it from a concept, like you said, to a wireframe, to a beta version, to, you know, getting coders, getting people to fix the bugs. What would be your advice on how to get from that beginning stage to a stage where they have something that they could really grow that'll be, you know, legacy, you know, long term?
So first things first, I always recommend you get to know your intended customer, always. So for us, because we work in education, we serve students. And so we started off building a social media presence. You can literally, that can be your first reach out into the world. We started off doing that. And as we were building, as we were interviewing and going out and talking to people, that becomes so important. And it's something I know a lot of people try to skip, because you don't want to just be like talking to people all day long, but you want to talk to people about their experiences, not sell your product. Don't go to people and say, hey, I have this phone. Have you ever thought about changing phones? No, don't ask them that, but ask them about their habits around, you know, communication. There's a book called The Mom Test that I always recommend. And it talks about how to structure your questions in a way that forces you to be actually curious, not just looking for the answer you came in here thinking you had already. But you want to do that. And I tell people, try to talk to at least 50 people. If you can get to 100 people, that's even better. Record those conversations, because they're going to tell you a lot about how your customer thinks about this problem. What kind of language do they use to talk about this problem? One thing we learned really early on is that students would talk about mentorship the way we talked about coaching. And we realized that they are the same thing, but the student has no vocabulary for the word coach. So if we were going to use the word coach, it needed to be integrated in a way that it fit with the understanding of what it was. Like, it had to be paired with something the student already knew. We didn't learn that just because we're smart. We learned that because we had a great relationship with students enough to be able to ask them, like, So, you know, someone that works on your personal statement, who would help you with that? And they would always say a mentor. And we were like, no, that's not what a mentor does. But now at least we understand that people don't understand, people don't distinguish between the two. So we have to create a separate strategy for either creating that vocabulary for people or not worrying about creating it, but integrating it in a way that people don't have to know the difference at all. So go out there, talk to your people. They're going to help you form those strategies. They're going to help you understand what the initial thing you're, because everybody comes with an app and they have this big idea, right? People, the people that created TikTok probably maybe kind of sort of maybe not thought of TikTok when they first came to it, that maybe. But what they first had was probably something very tiny compared to that. It was probably something you up. I don't remember TikTok's history. I should use Instagram. I know theirs better. Instagram started off being a place where you would go, you would check into restaurants and you would take pictures of your food. And then, you know, it was kind of like a Yelp, which is crazy because Yelp is so successful, but Instagram was not. And what they learned was that people were going in and uploading pictures, but not checking into the restaurants. They were engaging with the pictures of the food. They didn't care about, you know, liking. And so when they built the next version of Instagram, they took all that stuff out. They took it out and all they had was a way for people to upload pictures of their food. Probably looked a lot like Pinterest. But they listened and they realized what the smallest feature they needed to have in their product was, which was the ability to take a photo and upload it to a feed and for everyone else to be able to interact with it. That was it. They had this amazing big vision that you would check into restaurants and do all this stuff. And that didn't end up being what people actually wanted. So I would say going out there and talking to people helps you understand what is that first version, the smallest, cheapest version of your product need to be to have an impact. Mm-hmm. For us, it was all about connectivity and networking and human to human. So even though we want it to be content people like we're going to in the spring, we want it to be, you know, have videos and things like that. We couldn't be that because that wasn't what people were burning for first. So go out there and talk to your people. And let that guide you. Let those relationships help you create. You are co-creating your idea with your customer base. Now, I will caveat that and say that your customers cannot totally create your business because they don't have a concept of what they want for real. Mm-hmm. they think they do, but they don't. You know, Ford is famous for saying if you'd asked for what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. They would not have come up with an automobile, okay? It would not have occurred to them, automobile. So to some degree, you tell people what they want, but you still want them to be part of the telling process. And then you go, okay, I've heard all of that. I know you're not picturing this, but I am. And I'm going to create this for you. And I'm going to come back and ask you, did I get it right? And you're going to go, oh my God, I never would have thought of this ever. And we're like, yes, I know. That's because that's our job. We're the innovators. We took your problem and we turned it into something more. Mm-hmm. So yes, that's the first step. And then all the rest of the stuff kind of falls into place. The wireframes can literally be sketches on a notebook. If you can sketch, you got a wireframe. Okay. Put those sketches in a notebook, get them out there, find you a freelance designer. There's a free tool called Figma.
Oh, I'm sorry. I cut y'all. Go ahead.
No,
you go.
There's a free tool. If you're ever trying to figure out, okay, how do I build my first wireframes for something? First of all, sketch it on a paper and try to connect, use arrows to connect the buttons to what the buttons would do. Do that, sketch it on a paper, because you'd be surprised how many times you think, oh, and then they click this button and then they go to this screen and then you're like, well, how do they get out? And you forgot the back arrow. So sketch it on a paper. What does it look like? What does it do? You know, where are things at? Then you could take that to a designer, or if you're a designy type person, I was not originally, I had to grow into it. There's free tools like Figma, where you can download little kits and move little pieces on the screen to create a pretty wireframe. You don't have to hire anybody for that. That's free. And you can create your wireframe or you can hire a designer to do it for you. and boom, all you do now is turn it into a clickable prototype using Figma, and you have a product that you can go and take to people and show them, hey, this is what it would do. You would click here and it would open this thing up and it would flash this, and then a bird drops out and it flies. There you go. You take that to an investor or to a pitch competition, you get you some money, you hire you somebody to build it. That's it.
Okay. So where do you find, okay, I'm trying to go in order. You know, because you get so excited, you know, talking about these type of things.
No, I'm worries. Like,
let me make sure I go in steps. Okay. You say that when you get your wireframe and you have you some a product that you can actually show people and you want to get investors and things like that, where do you find these investors? Where do you find these competitions?
So initially, when you're looking for a competition, so, okay, here's where being Black becomes challenging. All right. Okay. So typically, when you think about Jeff Bezos and all of them people, they had what's called, let me back up even further than that. When you are raising money for a business, it comes in stages of the business. This is how you track the business's maturity over time. You have your friends and family round, which is that very friends, family, and fools round, people who you charm to give you some money. Okay. Then you have your pre-seed, which is, you know, you got a little, they people, the friends, family, and fools gave you some money. You got a little, you got a prototype built and you got some people clicking around on it. It might be terrible. It's going to be terrible. Accept it. It's going to be terrible. But you need it to be terrible because you need to learn. There are things that break on GABA to this day. And I'm like, how? But, and then you go to your pre-seed round. And so that is the pre-seed round is, hey, I've gotten this many people to sign up. Here's what they're said about it. Here's what I think I've learned. And here's a team I put together to try to get this thing off the ground. Then the pre-seed, they're going to give you a little bit of money. And then you go to your seed round. Seed round is typically where you start raising $3 to $4 million. Anything under like $2 million is pre-seed and below. Right? People are writing $500,000 checks these days. So you go to your seed round. When you have your seed round, it means you have people using it and people are paying you for it and people love it. And you're like, I think I got something here. I finally figured it out. Before this seed, everyone knows you don't know what you're doing. You don't talk about it like you don't know what you're doing, but everyone expects that your idea, your product will be changing. You'll be giving updates on a regular basis. It's like, here's what we're learning. Here's what we're seeing. It's all experimentation. At the seed round, this is when you're saying, I finally figured it out. Every time I talk to a customer, they understand what I'm talking about. We're getting lots of sales now. I figured out how to do this. I figured out how to do that. I get it. I understand. I have a team. We've made this many sales, but you know what? If we had another $3 million, boy, I could grow this thing out the water. So you go out there at your seed round, you raise that seed, and then that takes you to your Series A. At your Series A, you are a full-fledged, hardcore business now. You good. People come to you. It's easy to raise money at a Series A. They come to you and they go, what's your revenue? So, oh, we're making $10 million a month. You know, we're doing this and this. And they go, okay, well, how do you want the check cut? That's Series A. That's that. Then you have a Series A, B, C, D, E. And sometimes you have people do what's called a bridge, which is where you raise a smaller sum between series to get you to a specific milestone. So it happens that way. Now let's talk about that very first round, friends, family, and fools. Typically, when you talk to the average Black or Latinx founder, they don't have a friends, family round. Because most of our friends and family don't have money just laying around to throw in somebody's dang fool idea.
Say that again. Say that. Say that one more time.
You go to your Nana, be like, Nana, I want to build this app. She gonna say, baby, stay in school.
Right.
No, typically we don't have that. We don't have access to that. And so now there's a big conversation happening in the investor space about how systematically racist it is for them to even think that assume that that's the norm. Because most Black founders, most Latinx founders don't have those people. So what replaces your friends, family, and fools round is oftentimes pitch competitions and grants. So the way you find those is go to the internet. You go to the internet, you search pitch comp. What I do, I have a YouTube video about this and I will share it with you. Okay. How to automate a bot to do this for you. But there's a bot and you can program it to scrape Twitter and scrape the web using looking for certain keywords, and it'll compile a list of pitch competitions for you. And then from there, you just create a spreadsheet just like you did for medical school secondaries, and you apply for them before the deadline comes up. You have a form with your pre-filled questions. Keep a document with questions you ask over and over and over again. And it's a numbers game. The more you apply for, the better you get at pitching, the better your, the more feedback you get, the more refined you get, until you get to where we are, where we've won close to $500,000 in pitch grants. And that is very different, not very common to hear, but I think it's because I got really good really fast. And one of my gifts is storytelling, which I did not know. Mm-hmm. Until I got out here, and then I was like, oh, apparently I could tell a story. Who'd have knew? So yeah. So that's what you do to raise the money at the friends and family round. And while you're doing that, you're also building out the prototype, doing the wireframing and things like that. And then one day you launch an app. Okay. There's no set time frame. It could take 6 months, it could take a year, it could take, in our case, Gabba used to be a website. In January of 2021, Gabba was a website. In September of 2021, Gabba was an app. So that much time to get mm-hmm. the app together. But that's coming from us having a concept and having already been around for, you know, a year. Essentially at that point. So it can take, I count that. So probably a year and a half to actually get to an app mm-hmm. from where we were.
Okay. And it's something that I don't want to zoom past, which yes, is you were doing this simultaneously.
With school.
That's not normal.
You're right.
That is so, not normal.
Yeah. You're right.
So how? Yeah. How did, okay.
So, okay, yeah. So that's a good question. I don't know. It's the short answer. Because
at this point, you have a team.
Yeah, now I do. And there are honestly times when I look out at my team and I'm thinking, how on earth did I do this without you? How? I don't know how it was all of these people at one time. Here's what I will say
okay.
about the business and managing the growth and development. It all cannot be done in one day. And so be realistic initially about your timeline. Even though I'm full time now with Gabba, I've only been full time since June of 2021. And I remember because I got my first paycheck and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm paying my own salary. Here we go. In June of 2021, Gabba was born May 18th, 2020. I remember because it's like my child, May 18th, 2020. And so it took me over a year to get my first paycheck. Over the course of that year, I did not accomplish much. Over the course of that year, I was talking to customers. I was working with my friends on, you know, different wireframes. I did an accelerator program, which is something I do recommend, an accelerator or something called an incubator, which is a program that teaches you how to develop a startup, how to think about creating a startup. It's a great way to just kind of get a launch. You learn all this stuff in a short period of time, and sometimes they'll even put money in your pocket. So in our case, we did an accelerator out of Georgia Tech called CreateX, and they gave us $4,000 to build the prototype. And during that time, all I did was talk to people. I built a website in Wix to see if people would sign up for a concept, which is something called an MVP. MVP is just you basically just testing it to see if people would be interested in this thing. And
that's a minimal viable product, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And
also at the point of you building this, is this in your MBA year Or is this in your
fourth year? Yeah, so I started in my MBA year and it carried over into my fourth year.
Okay.
MD. But I didn't make a ton of progress. You have to think, at that point, I didn't really have a product. I graduated medical school in March of 2021. GABA became a website in January of 2021. So it wasn't like I was making crazy gains over time. I was gradually making progress to something. I was talking to customers. I was getting out there and pitching investors, much to my frustration, because no one told me that I was too young to be pitching investors. No one told me. I just knew you're supposed to go out here and you get money. I was pitching investors and they were saying no. And honestly, investors don't say that anyway. They would say no all the time. But I, at that stage, that was a blow for me because, and so for a long time, that was all I did was work with my team. We did some wireframes. I built this little Wix website for people to sign up. And then we built this other website, and that was it. We kind of traded water for a while. GABA didn't start accelerating until I was full-time able to focus on it. So okay. That would have been, you know, April, March of 2021 happened. And then the app launch in September. So you see, between March and September, I made significant gains. Mm-hmm. So I would say if you're in school, you're doing this alongside a bunch of other things, be realistic about what you can do and don't try to do everything at one time. Mm-hmm. The most important thing for you to do is talk to your customer and build relationships with those people. So even though I wasn't selling anything, I was still sending schools an email like, hey, I'm a student. I just want to ask you about like your problems with this, or your experience with this. I was still like meeting with directors of deans of admissions and just like telling them I'm doing research and just getting out there. I was just talking to people. And those conversations ended up being absolutely vital to the development of the app and all of the things that have happened after that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how much would you say it generally costs to get your first app out?
It depends on how fancy. It also depends on if you are. I think another thing that can hurt you or help you is the contractor you hire. So I only made the mistake of hiring a contractor one time.
When you say contractor, what do you mean by that?
Like hire someone through like one of these like Upwork or Fiverr or things like that. I've only done that one time. Okay. After that one time, I said I will never again do that because I burned through $6,000 or $7,000 and I didn't even have a product that really worked at the end of it. You will learn very quickly that leading a technical team is a special kind of brain. Not everybody has it because developers, they don't intuit what you're building. Like you could be like, and then, you know, I want the user to be able to upload a file. And to you, that might make all the sense in the world, but to them, they have to have it in a very set framework so they can break it down into its smallest possible task. Cause you don't realize the upload function is like 100 different things. It's, you know, you got to click, the button has to be clicked and it has to open, which means it has to check into certain databases and the file has to render and then it has to save somewhere on the database. And then they're thinking about it in a way that you can't even fathom. Mm-hmm. And so I really learned early that leading a technical team was not my skill because my mind doesn't do that. I'm the visionary. I get paid not to get caught in the weeds. I get paid to walk in the room and go, wave my hands around and say, it's supposed to do this. And someone else designs that this. And then the team comes back and they go and they run it to customer and the customer says, yes, that. And they come back to me and they go this. And I go, yeah. And then the developers go, okay, and we can break that down. That's not what the visionary does. So I would say, save yourself some struggle and either one, hire a developer who has built a product, like been a founder or CEO themselves before, because then they have a different kind of brain. Or and maybe even better because it saves you money, find yourself a technical advisor. Go to one of these, you know, an undergraduate colleges, find you a professor, or, you know, go on some, join some of these technical groups or these startup groups and find you a technical advisor. That's someone who typically has experience building technical products, who can partner with you and kind of look over your shoulder to help you hire your first technical person. I did not have that. I hired a developer, burned through a bunch of money, didn't have a working product, learned my lesson the hard way, went out and said, I'm never hiring a contractor again. From now on, I want to have full-time employees who I can control and manage myself. And then I went to Angel's List and I found that person and I hired them direct. And they helped pull us out of the foolishness that I got us into. But it took that person from November of 2021 until February, March-ish to sort through the damage that had been done by that first developer. So I would say, as you're thinking about hiring your team, don't neglect the power of having an advisor, someone who is not going to be charging you money. They may take a little piece of the company, but someone who's just going to sit over your shoulder and help fill in the gaps for the things you don't know yet. Because that's what they're there for. They're there to help make sure you make smart decisions.
Mm-hmm. And so did you find this through your incubator, or did you find this through Georgia Tech, that person for you?
The advisor, we never had a technical advisor because I'm hardhead. I learned this the hard way. So I'm telling you, don't do this. You can find technical advisors, great technical advisors, in an incubator or an accelerator. Okay. That is not what I did. I went out here and I said, I'm going to figure it out on my own. Sometimes I'm one of those people, I'm so optimistic. I'm like, it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. it'll be great. And then at the end, I'm like, oh, I could have probably took a shortcut if I had really thought about it. Mm-hmm. So your incubator and accelerators can help you find great technical advisors. Pick ones that are, ask them about who are their advisors and their coaches, and pick one that you feel has someone there that can really help enrich what you're building. And then hire a technical person or a designer. I personally would hire a designer or a user experience person, UX person first, because they're going to help make sure things make sense. And then a developer.
Okay. But one thing I do want to say is, like, your optimism, I think, helps you, you know, because yeah. Probably when somebody comes in and they say, you know, somebody that's just, they're so rigorous, you know, they're like, we can't do that. You're probably like, why can't I do it? Like, we you can have do it. We gotta try.
Yeah, exactly. You will get that. We had a machine learning engineer was like, what you're trying to do is not possible. And I was like, why not? And he was like, we just can't. And I was like, but why? And he was like, I mean, what do you mean why? I'm like, I'm asking you why. I'm not convinced that we can't. And mm-hmm. He was like, well, that's just not something I specialize in. I said, oh, okay, so you can't do it. I'm talking to the wrong person. No problem. But if I wasn't myself, I would have been like, oh, and I got discouraged and I would have taken it personally. You will learn very quickly in the founder world to ask why. Tell me why. Even when people come to me and they say, oh, GABA didn't work, I hated it, I didn't find a mentor, or, you know, this was stupid. And tell me why. What were you expecting to happen? What happened? Tell me why. Because you can learn a lot from even negative feedback. Mm-hmm. So I would say grow tough skin and definitely learn to smile, because things are so important for you and they'll help make your product and your company just stronger.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we've gone through making the app. You finally put it on the app store. How do you market to people and get people to support it?
Yeah, that's a whole nother. Okay, so when you get on the app store, they don't tell you these things. Okay. When you get in the app store, rankings matter.
They do. Okay.
And the way your store is designed and set up matters. So don't skimp on your app store listing. Treat that thing like you're selling a house and deck it out. Put all the things in it, the images, the videos. Gabless is about to change because it doesn't even say what we do anymore. Don't tell the Apple people that. That's another thing. Apple and them will crush your dream in a minute. So be careful with these app stores. you'd be surprised how much information they ask you for, and they can definitely delay or deny your update. So mm-hmm. when you do put something in the App Store, make sure you tested it, make sure it works. Make sure you take that App Store application process very seriously, particularly for Apple. I think Android's getting on this too now, but take it very seriously as though you're turning in a product that someone's going to grade. Make sure it works, it looks good and all that, because when they go and they look at your code, they will come back with questions about what you do and why is this and what is this. And that's another reason why you want a technical person to answer all those questions. And then even after you submit it, it's not like it's going to pop up in the App Store right away. It can take several days, if not weeks, for them to actually approve it. So do realize that you are creating a product that still needs to be, it's like you're not your own boss when it comes to selling that product. You have to play by the rules when you go in the App Store, or they will pull you down in a minute. That's the rap of us, but they will. So once you get in the App Store, you go through the process. You have to pay to get in the App Store. I think it's like $100. Set your stuff up, deck it out. They approve it. You're good to go. Now what you need to do is get reviews. And because reviews matter. And you need to use keywords in your App Store that are searchable, or that people usually search for when they're looking for products like yours. So that's, again, just research. That's getting out there and looking in the App Store and looking at other people who do what you do and seeing how they talk about their products and what kinds of language are they using, so that you can use that similar language so that you can increase your ranking in the App Store. It's just like a Google search. Mm-hmm. Some things come up on Google page one, option one, and it's because they just own the spot. And then some things come on page 14 and we never know about those people, because who knows about things that are on past page two? I don't know anything about page
two. You want to make sure I get to page two.
Yeah, I'm about to say, I think I stop at Louis. If it ain't on that first page, it wasn't for me.
Right.
So don't be to page two in the App Store. But there are a ton of great articles out there about how to do Apple Store optimization and things like that. There's a whole strategy around it. That would be like a whole nother conversation me and you could sit down and have. But getting people to download your app is it's the things you do in the App Store, yes, but it's also the community that you build around your app. So while your app is out there, you want to continue to build your social media presence and continue to create a community in social media, because those people will convert, which is they go from one spot to the next and they do what you want them to do. They will convert, they will download your app, and they will be your most loyal users. Even if they don't, even if what they're telling you isn't positive, they will stick with you through thick and thin. And it's because they built a relationship with you and your brand in a different environment. The people that come to us from Instagram, oh, they are our champions. When we ask, hey, we need people to test the app, and we'll give you a cow and a candle, they're like, me, I'll do it. And it's because they have gotten to see us grow. Someone said they've been with us since we had 40 followers. And I was like, really? You've been with us for a long time? And they were like, yeah. So they've seen us grow, and they are your champions. They'll tell you when things work, when things don't work, when something looks good, when it doesn't look good. You want those people. So social media is an amazing, amazing way to build buzz around your app. And then you, as the founder, are the product. So just like you have this podcast, this is an extension of your company. Everything you do as a founder is an extension of your company. People will download your app, not because they necessarily have the problem right now, but because they love you and they want to know what you're doing and they want to be a part of it. And they're like, yeah. And they want to be able to say, when this thing blows up like Clubhouse, I know that person. I was there. And there are people now who was with me when Yattle was on the website who come and they're like, oh my gosh, it's crazy. I know you. And I'm like, I'm not famous, sis, but thank you.
So yes, it's on the way.
Because clearly, we'll see. But yeah, so build your social media presence. Continue to do your the company needs a social media, you need a social media, continue to do speaking engagements, go on people's podcasts, pitch, do a pitch competitions because you'd be surprised. And just get the word out there, get the word out there. Oh, something that's very, very important that I oftentimes forget to tell people. When you're doing these pitch competitions, you will learn that it's the same people over and over again at them. It's kind of a interesting little circle. You kind of bump into people all over. So make sure you have your LinkedIn set up. And every time you go into one of those things, drop your LinkedIn. Tell people you want to connect. Try to find, you know, who are the people that are on the panel or on the judges, connect with them on LinkedIn. And then further than that, then connecting on LinkedIn, reach out to them and say, hey, I really appreciated your support and your feedback you gave me on this panel. We're going to incorporate the feedback you gave me. And I would love to stay connected and can keep you informed about what's going on with the company. Can I add you to our listserv? And they'll say, sure. And that listserv, that you just send them an email once a month or once a quarter, every 3 months, whatever you want to do. And it simply says, here's where we've done with the company. Here's where we've had triumphs. Here's where we've had losses. Here's where I'm struggling. Here's what you can do to help me if you want to help me. Those people, you cannot believe how powerful your community is. They are, the people that are on that listserv are the reason GABA won that $96,000 grant. The reason, because I didn't know anything about it. And two of them tagged me in it on Twitter. It was like, you need to apply for this. This is on my feed. You need, and I don't go on social media, so I'm blind. They are my eyes and they become your eyes and ears. So if you, as you're doing this, remember that network is key. Build your community, not just of investors and stuff like that. Just build a listserv of people who love you, who think you're a rock star and want to be a part of your orbit, whatever that happens to be, because they're going to keep you afloat in a lot of different ways. And you'll be surprised. You'll be pitching one day for a pitch competition for a grant, and you'll see their face sitting back at you from the judge's table. And you'll be like, okay, now, wink, wink. Wink, wink.
Look out, look out.
Look in my eyes. Look in my eyes. You see me up here, right? Okay, now, play me with this money.
Right.
Well, you would be surprised. So definitely do that as well. It doesn't lead to app downloads, but it does keep money on the table, which keeps your business alive.
Okay. All right. That's a lot of great advice.
That's a lot.
Now I do want to ask you this. I got two more questions and I'm gonna get you out of here because I think I got you over the time.
It's okay.
Okay. What advice would you give to somebody that wants to pursue their dream, wants to pivot from something that they were going for typically in career? You know, because I'm pretty sure you dealt with this, like, you're a doctor. Like, yes. what are you doing? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, people have that because they don't understand that, yeah, I'm a doctor, and what they look at is the safety of it, you know, but they're not looking at the fact that, you know, you about to be the next Mark Cuban. You know what I mean? They're not like, looking at that. You know, they don't get it. You know, so how did you deal with that? You know, with the probably your family disagreeing, or how did you deal with that?
You know what? I'm gonna tell you the truth.
Okay.
As a Black person going into medicine,
mm-hmm.
coming from Flint, Michigan.
Okay.
Being the first doctor in your family.
Yeah.
What I was doing was already revolutionary. The likelihood of me coming this route was very unlikely, very slim. If I had relied on their vision for me, if I let that be the determining factor in everything I did, I wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be in medical school. Okay. I'd be somewhere else. Maybe, I don't know, be me in social work, because we have a lot of social workers in our family.
Mm-hmm.
So, I am of the belief that even though it's well-intended, you know, family, friends, mentors, and things like that, that showing up as your full self is such a revolutionary thing to do,
mm-hmm.
that you almost can't continue to let people be the determinant on whether or not you continue to do that. Because if you had, you wouldn't be you. And you wouldn't be doing any of the things you're doing. Mm-hmm. I now have the mentality when someone says I can't do something, or, you know, that doesn't seem plausible, or, you know, it, I don't know, Candace, that doesn't seem that, I don't know, that doesn't seem right. My internal conversation with myself is, okay, you can't believe me, just watch. Yeah. Watch me do it. And when I come back to you and I did it, we're just going to smile about it. I'm not going to rub it in your face. I'm not going to say anything mean and nasty.
You're better than me.
I understand. I understand. You can't, I'm sure people couldn't believe planes were going to come out. Imagine what our ancestors would think if I told, you know, one of our ancestors, I just got off a call with someone in front of a monitor with a green line in front of me, and they could see me and I could see them and we could hear each other. They'd be like,
no way.
What? Yeah. What? Yeah. So I think being a Black person in America with a dream is always revolutionary, because we go through so much to overcome so many obstacles to just get to the smallest rung. So for us to dare to climb even higher than that is so daring and so beautiful to watch and be a part of, that it's like, I can't allow the world and the people in it to tell me what's possible, because if that were the case, I wouldn't be Black doing none of the stuff that I'm doing. I like to ski. Apparently Black people don't ski. I like to swim. Apparently Black people don't swim. Like, I can't let people and what they say be the limiting factor in what I dream about. And since I can't let them, because I wouldn't be here, then I can't let them be that in any other arena of my life. But you're right. It takes a lot of audacity to step out of that, especially because people will remind you of all the ways you're going to fail. People talk about my student loans like they're going to have to pay them. Be like, but your student loans, I'm like, are they coming out of your paycheck? Okay, so then why are we talking about my finances? Why are you all up in my coin? Okay, let me manage my coin. Okay, I'll do this. I got this. You'll meet people who do a lot of fear, who do fear, and it's okay for them to be afraid. That's their problem. Yeah, that's okay. That's their problem. That doesn't have to be my problem. It doesn't have to be my experience. Okay. You know, I've had people say, well, what if you fail? And I say, well, it wouldn't be the first time.
Well,
what are you going to do? You know, what if what would happen if, you know, if last year I ran into someone who said, you know, what would happen if, you know, you didn't sell it? Like, what if no one bought it? And I was like, well, then I would just build something else. And then they were like, well, then what would you build? I said, I guess I'll find out when I get there. There's always a what. I mean, life doesn't stop. Just because if I was going to stop just because I had a failure, nothing would happen. I mean, yeah. So you take it in stride, and you just, some of the people you will laugh at later, and you know what? It's okay. It's okay. That's their experience. People speak from their own lens. It doesn't have to be your experience.
I totally agree. I think I just had to get out of this like mindset of a revenge tour. You know, I was just like,
oh, that's cool too, though. That's cool too. Because I fully plan. You don't understand. You about to watch my social media change this year, because I plan to stunt just a little bit harder this year. I plan to stunt just a little bit harder this year. Don't worry. I understand. I'm with that. I'm with it. Sometimes I'm like, boy, I can't wait to what. I love it when people, hey, Carol, I ain't heard from you in a minute. I Googled you and I saw you doing the dang thing.
Keep watching. Keep watching.
Girl, I ain't heard from you in a minute. You act like you too busy for people, honey. Google me. I am. I am too busy for you. I sure am too busy. So that's okay. That could be a motivator. Go for it.
Yeah. I just think, you know, a lot of the times what I find is the biggest problem is that nobody can tell you what's right for you. Only I know that.
Yeah.
I know. Most people just get so, we get so caught up in family, friends, being embarrassed, pride, being broke, looking broke. From that, it's just a never ending cycle of never living your life.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. People ask me all the time, how did you make the decision to go and do this instead of going to residency? And I'm like, I just took a bet on myself. Did you know it was going to work? No. Did you know it was going to? No, I didn't know anything. Okay. Here's what I knew. I knew that every time I sat down to do my residency application, it made me sick to my stomach. It rotted my core to think of myself in this place. Yes, I know that there's job security and there's a paycheck and there's benefits and all of that stuff, but it rotted my core. I would have literally been a lion pacing around a cage, and a man, I'd have spent half of my salary on therapy bills and Prozac. I would have been miserable. And I knew I was gonna be miserable because I felt nauseous to my stomach at the idea. And everybody kept saying, oh, but if you go to residency, then you can start your business. Oh, after residency, then you can do this. And after residency, then you can. And it just felt like, you're asking me not to live my life for 5 years. Do you understand what you're asking me to do? You're asking me to sacrifice my wellness for another 5 years. I did it. I got the MD. What is the point of going to residency, getting further wrapped up in this system that I don't want to be in, not building any connections or anything towards what I truly want to be in? And what am I going to do when there, as it did happen, fourth year clinicals, I had an opportunity to see really where my heart was. I had an investor call. I was on internal medicine and I had to see a patient. The patient was late for their appointment. I had this investor call. I had two choices. I could go in there and see that patient who's not dying, probably just need a refill on their blood pressure medication, or I can go in here and I can pitch to these investors and potentially raise $100,000 for my company. My preceptor was standing right there when and he said to me, the patient is here. You're going to see the patient. I turned to him and I said, no, I have a meeting and it's important. And I walked away. I didn't ask for permission. I didn't say, can I? This is my life. I am the driver. This is what I have to do. This is your life, your patient. This is where you have driven yourself. Go do your job and I'm going to do mine. And I see you in 30. And I walked in that conference room and I sat down and I owned that meeting with those investors. That was when I realized if I had to choose, I would never choose this. I would never choose this over that, because one of them really had my heart and the other one just had my responsibility, my sense of duty. And that's not enough to drive you, drive you crazy, but not enough to drive you for the long term. And so I had a lot of people who discouraged me. Oh, you know, you went all this way. And I had someone even say, you took a slot from someone who would have gone into primary care. You could have, you know, someone else wanted your slot to get in medical school. And then you took the slot and then you, exactly, tiny violin plant. But then you took the slot and I said, and I did something marvelous with it. And I'm going to give back to the medical community through technology. It wasn't a waste. Just because I'm not going into clinical practice means nothing. And also, unless you were in that room when they voted yes on my portfolio, you don't get to reverse the decision that was made for me 4 years ago. Good day. So
absolutely,
people are always going to have something to say.
And I think that's what I love speaking with you. I love to talk to you because even though sometimes I can tell that you're tired, you're not unhappy.
Yeah. You get what I mean?
Yeah, you always had this like level of like, you know, we get into it, you know. And
yeah,
I think a lot of times I see people in their career and they're just like,
they dead. Oh dead, man, you see dead. These attendings?
It's ooh, walking
they
corpses,
don't have a
you
know? Soul.
Yeah, it's just walking corpses.
They just going through the motions. They just counting down the days to the day when they can start living. Which it used to be, you could start living after residency, then you get into a job and it's, you could start living when you retire, but man, you're not guaranteed that. You see COVID, people are dying all over the thing on country. You're not guaranteed that.
You gotta go
live
for it
today, because you never know. And I joke now, I'm like, you know, worst of worst, I'll become a doctor. And people people crack up because they're like, those are pretty good odds. I'm like, I stack the cards.
You're already a doctor, by the way.
Yeah, right.
So don't get that
confused. First to worst, I go practice medicine. Right. First to worst, I come back and I go, you know what? I practice medicine. Yeah. But you know, but there's so many rungs for me to grab on the fall down before I get there. But to think that practicing medicine is my down. Mm-hmm. Who would have ever thought? You know, that's my low. Most people's low is homelessness on the street. I have two professional level degrees. I have no low. Six figures is my bottom. So if I have those odds, then of course I can bet on myself. Because I know at the end of the day, if it all goes to hell, I'm just going to reach out and grab six figures.
Yeah.
Fine.
You're the unicorn's unicorn, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's fine. It's fine. I'm going to lick my bruises. I'm going to get up, get my tail untucked, and I'm going to try it again. Because at the end of the day, my bottom rung is six figures. Mm-hmm. You're not going to find me out here on the street homeless. That's not possible. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, being an entrepreneur from my lens isn't the biggest risk that I've ever taken because I've done everything to de-risk it. There's no below this. Mm-hmm. What, somebody wouldn't hire me? What, would I have to go live with a friend for a couple months until I got, what, $180,000 a year consulting job? Mm-hmm. I could do that. Mm-hmm. My pride is not above that. So I think, you know, one, don't ask people for permission, and two, realize that there are always other options out there. And I might be saying this because I also now have the luxury of hanging around other doctors who have bailed on the medical train. And we talk about this all the time about how until you get outside of the cage, you really think that that's it. Like, that's the world. And then you step out and you go, wait a minute. There's a lot out here that I could do. But until you step out of that, then you don't really see that. And so now looking at people on the inside of the cage, it's like, we understand that you don't understand because you're not on the outside. If you stepped out here, you would see there's a whole world out here that you didn't even know existed. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as a medical doctor starving. There's no such thing.
Right.
You might not be in medicine, but there are a lot of things you can do with the degree.
Most definitely. Mm-hmm. Most definitely. Okay. Final question. Yes. A motto that you live by.
Right now, my motto is Rome was not built in a day. Mm-hmm. And I say that religiously to myself because I'm a perfectionist. I want things now. I want to get it all done. Sometimes I go to bed and I have a mountain of email and everybody's asked me to send them something and do this and do that and this. And I'm tired and I just want to watch Hulu. And honestly, I tell myself, well, Rome wasn't built in a day, and I pop some popcorn and I watch my Hulu because these people can wait on these emails. I'm sure they didn't think about me after that call. And so I can think about them in 2 days when I have more energy. Mm-hmm. So that's my motto right now. What was my motto before GABA became so crazy? Take a bet on yourself.
Absolutely.
We put our life force into so many things and so many other people's projects and initiatives. Take a bet on you. Mm-hmm. See what you can really do. You'd be surprised. You would really be surprised what you're capable of. And that's the best gift you can give yourself, is the gift of really seeing what you're capable of when you give yourself a shot. Mm-hmm. Really, we give everybody else a chance. We give so many systems a chance. Give yourself the same opportunity.
Okay. Thank you. We appreciate you so much. But something that we always do here, we always want to support what it is that you're doing. So definitely give us the app, the website. We need everything.
So if you're looking for us on socials, it's at GoGABACO. If you're looking for us online or in the app store, well, in the app store, you could just search for GABA. But if you're looking for us online, you go to gogaba.co. I know that people want to put com on the end. Stop. It's not the 1990s. It's co.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what gogaba.com is going to take you to, but that's not us. Gogaba.co. And we would love to connect with you there.
Okay. And it's the same thing on the app store?
Yep. Well, okay. On the app store, just put in GABA.
Okay.
Or GoGABA. Either one of them will pull up the app.
All right, most definitely. And we certainly appreciate you for sacrificing your time and coming of through course. And giving us just so much great information on how to go through building that app and even just the life lessons and the mentality that it takes to get to that next level. So we certainly appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And we thank everybody for tuning into another episode of the Liberators Podcast. If you're still here, you're enjoying the Liberators Podcast. We ask that you would share and rate us on your favorite listening platform. Also, follow us on Instagram at the Liberators Podcast. If you would like to support the development of this podcast financially, please follow the support link from Anchor in the show notes. Thank you for your time. Stay liberated. From yours truly, your host, Jeremy Shropshire.